Mrs. McNair had the most forthright, hearty appreciation and approval of their predecessors, the Russells. She had done such wonderful things with the grounds, and the house was done in beautiful taste. I was amazed and bowled over, and warmly pleased. But this is a first for me. Usually the incoming wife's description of the condition in which the mansion or government house was left by her predecessor has such a subtle cruelty that it's fearsome. After lunch, we saw the Head Start movie, Poncho. The wives were mildly interested, and then I bid them goodbye and headed for the White House, some rest before dressing for dinner. I had the rather frustrated feeling that we'd lost a chance. We'd had a unique, powerful, captive audience, and we hadn't really made a sale. What's worse, we hadn't done our best. All day long, Lyndon and all the cabinet labored with the governors in briefings for the give and take of questions. And at 7 o'clock, we met again for dinner. As they went down the line, I felt a little sad. So few of them were really old, strong friends. John Connolly, of course, the handsomest man there. Without Nellie, she was having a mother-daughter tea for Sharon. And staunch Buford Ellington and Catherine. And Jack Burns, who looks like a poet. Mrs. Burns had insisted on going out in her wheelchair across the mud today to plant her tree, which was one of the farthest ones out on the point. And not such veterans, but I feel are very friendly to us. Philip and Joan Hoff of Vermont. And Hewlett and Mary Alice Smith of West Virginia. The room was full of new faces. And of course, the object of all eyes were the Romneys of Michigan. She makes me vaguely uneasy, a sort of an excess of virtue. And the Reagans of California, both sleekly handsome. And the George Wallaces of Alabama. Our conversation leaned rather heavily on my Alabama heritage. One of the nicest couples, quite regardless of party. So warm and attractive and outgoing. Nelson and Happy Rockefeller had been down all day, but couldn't stay for dinner. On the other hand, I got to meet the final member of the five Rockefeller brothers that I didn't know. Winthrop was on my left, quite different from all the rest. Not quite so used to success as his brothers, it seemed to me, and appealing. He likes his job, and I like that. I was fascinated with his story of his war years and how he came to Arkansas. On my right was Governor Guy of North Dakota, young, handsome, thoroughly likable. It was a funny thing about the Kirks of Florida. It seemed she had accepted and regretted two or three times in rather rapid succession, excepting, I think, at the last for the luncheon, and then did not show. The governor was there for the men's luncheon and the briefings, but then left in the afternoon, Bess told me, saying that he had to go to get his wife, who was in Florida. They made it back for dinner, very much the object of all eyes. A Republican governor, Rhodes of Ohio, I believe it was, made a rousing toast, an endorsement of Lyndon, at the end of the evening. And then, after coffee and liqueurs, we went in for one of the gayest entertainments I can remember. Guys and Dolls by Jean Dalrymple of the New York City Center Light Opera Company. Hugh O'Brien singing Sky Masterson.
He looks like a born gambler without any makeup. Pert Anita Gillette, a very improbable Salvation Army lassie. Such gay numbers. Take Back Your Mink and Marry the Man Today. Everybody was in a good humor, and I felt it was a gay ending to a hard-working day, a nice balance, thanks to Bessie's good planning. And then, as soon as the entertainment was over, the helicopter whirred in on the lawn.
Lyndon said goodbye to the governors, and all of the guests crowded to the windows and out on the porch to watch the departure. I kissed Lyndon goodbye for his long trip to Guam, and he was off, the end of a gargantuan day's work, and then an 18-hour flight to begin again on another field of problems. He'd gathered up the Burns and the Guerreras of Guam to go with him. I circled the floor, saying goodnight, and was upstairs before 12. And then I did the most enormously self-indulgent thing. I crawled into bed with a Dubonnet and watched a rerun of Gunsmoke that the Signal Corps had recorded for me at 10 o'clock. Tomorrow I was leaving for the Virgin Islands. I felt somehow that special relief that you feel at the beginning of a vacation. And it was delicious, in spite of a guilty feeling, to know that my husband was instead engaged in an endurance contest.